All-Star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night, I flew home. It was late. And you know what? On the plane, the kids and I were eating Sour Patch Kids and we were eating Skittles. Yeah. We were eating, you know. Yeah. So come on. I know, right? You love that, right? Don't you?
Well, the kids love it. And there was a time when I loved Skittles and Sour Patch Kids. Yeah. But like just hearing Sour Patch Kids makes my jaw hurt.
Oh, really? Okay.
I can't do that real sweet stuff anymore. Yeah.
And you know what? I'm fine with it. I released a long time ago.
Are you really though?
Are you eat?
Are you really fine with it?
People are gonna eat what they eat.
Are you really fine with it though? Don't you wish your kids were eating like, you know, salads?
Yeah, of course I wish they were always eating that, but they're not. And people, human beings, are going to eat what they want. You know, Adam, when your kids are little and they're in the high chair and you're cutting up avocados for them.
Carrot slices.
Look at them.
My kids are going to be so healthy.
They love avocados. She's eating quinoa. Oh, my gosh. She loves it. Look at her mouth. You know, and you think you're like this genius parent because your kid is eating avocados at age two and they love it. And they've never had a cupcake because you've kept that from them so far. And you're the perfect parent. And you are until they get out in the world or they go to a birthday party or they go to preschool and somebody brings snacks and they taste sugar because you can't avoid that, you know, for their whole life. And then they start wanting the bad stuff. They start wanting the pizza they had at someone's birthday party. And all of a sudden, the kid who was mowing down avocado and kale now will only eat mac and cheese. Yep. That's their only food product that they will eat. Maybe chicken nuggets.
But you lied.
Maybe
you lied though when you said I'm okay with it. What you meant to say is I've given up. I've resigned to the fact. Not that you're not okay with it.
Totally.
You've just given up. And I know I've done the same thing. You're right. Every time Dave comes in here and talks about Winter's eating this stuff. Oh, we make sure this isn't in the house. I mean, just wait, buddy. Just wait.
Just wait.
Just wait. You wait.
Until they get out in the real world of kindergarten and birthday parties and even church night. I know, David, you must have donuts at church night on Wednesday night, right?
Of course. We have donuts and all sorts of sugar at church.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. So, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, where
what
does it
push back?
Okay. I try really hard to get healthy food for my kids. And I sometimes succeed and often fail. But what's the alternative? Like, do I just... It sounds like you guys have totally given up. And then you look
you have to try.
The big picture of our world where so much of our food is processed and terrible for us. Mm-hmm. And obesity and all sorts of other problems that go with bad diet are so prevalent. So are we just throwing in the towel and being like, my kids are going to be, you know, terribly unhealthy because of the diet we're feeding them. Is that what you're perpetuating? Is that what I should do? Just give up?
No, I mean, I would argue try, but don't, you know, don't let it like totally destroy you if your kids, you know. Mm-hmm. Although I will say this, like with my girls, like we never wanted to give them pop and soda. And to this day, with some exceptions, by and large, they really don't drink that much pop. So... Mm. That's an influence that worked.
Yeah.
So why doesn't the rest of it work?
And it can be done. If you set strict rules for what your kids can and cannot eat, it can be done. I grew up that way. I grew up kosher. I'm still kosher to this day. That is a strict dietary rules. And, you know, we couldn't eat any non-kosher meat. We didn't eat meat outside the house. I used to go to birthday parties with a Hebrew National, a kosher hot dog wrapped in tinfoil. And my mother would say, give this to the mom. She will make this for you. This is what you eat at a birthday party because they're not going to have kosher food there. I did that. And to this day, I remain kosher. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's any healthier, but what I'm saying is there were guidelines and there were rules that I still adhere to. So I guess if you were if kids are as afraid of their mothers as I was of mine, that can continue.
There you go.
But I don't know if that's the case.
I asked you that when you said that. I'm like, is that because you were because of the religious connotation? You're like, oh, no, I was scared of my parents.
Yeah. I was not afraid of God. I was afraid of my mother.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what we did. And I still do it. And so it can be done, but it doesn't preclude me from not eating sugar. You know, it's just things that are labeled kosher, you know, whatever our dietary guidelines are. And the reason we bring this all up is what I was telling Vanita. Nearly 70% of parents in the U.S. don't think the country's standard diet is healthy for their children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, because if you look at what we're serving them in school lunches, it's not healthy. It's pizza, it's chicken nuggets, it's chocolate milk. Not that chocolate milk is so unhealthy. It's actually not so bad for you, especially if you're drinking like chocolate skim milk. Not that bad. But more than 57% of calories of children came from ultra-processed foods. That's where we could be doing better. That's where we could have, you know, the salad bar at school or the quinoa salad that they prepare in advance. We could be doing a lot better. And so could parents. And usually I'm all about the parents need to take control. It's the parents' responsibility.
Yeah.
But this time, I really do feel like it's also the schools, because they get paid by Coca-Cola to put a soda machine mm-hmm. in the school, you know, a vending machine
right.
in the school. And I understand a lot of it has Dasani now because now we know better. But a lot of it still has Mountain Dew or Coke or Pepsi or whatever that is.
But I, you know what? I don't even blame schools for that, because schools, I can see schools wanting every dollar they can. And it boils down to, and I know this is, it's not as simplistic as it seems, but it boils down to personal choice. And it boils to, yes, you could have that machine there, but it's not forcing me to go buy a Coca-Cola. And so that's, I mean, you still have to have some responsibility there. You can't just wash your hands of it. But you're right in the fact that the food we eat certainly makes it much more difficult to escape. I've said this thousands of times on this radio station, that eating healthy is very expensive and it's time consuming.
Yes.
And our lives, whether you like it or not, the American work life, work balance, home life, makes it almost impossible to eat healthy.
I agree. I agree, because, you know, mom isn't home or dad isn't home chopping a ton of vegetables or, you know, sauteing the kale or plucking the organic chicken. You know, if you both have, if you have two parents that are working and kids in school and sports and all of that stuff, it does take a longer time to create a meal. Now, this texture is really interesting. I'm going to read it to you. This texter says, as parents, we must try early on, but as they grow older, they see everything, so we must lead by example. If we start saying things in the wrong way, it can lead to eating disorders, and that's very sad.
Yep.
That's almost worse. Now, this is such an excellent thing to bring up, because if I say to my kids, like, oh, you know, do you need a third helping of that? Or,
Tubby,
you know,
put
I think
down
you've
the fork.
Had enough. Like, immediately, mom, stop fat shaming me.
Yeah.
Immediately. And even if they're kidding or not, like, that's what they think. Don't tell me what to eat. Don't fat shame me. Don't, because they've learned about this on social media, fat shaming and body positivity, which are all great things. I grew up in the 80s. Our parents fat shamed us all the time. Oh, you look like you put on some weight. Like, they'd actually just say it. But you can't do that anymore, which is, so if you start to question some of their choices, like, do you need to eat the whole burrito from Chipotle, or can you put half, even though you're saying that in a kind way, it will be looked on as fat shaming or body shaming. And you have to be very careful, because teens are sensitive, both boys and girls, to eating disorders.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I'm not advocating for eating disorders, but do you have to be, I mean, sometimes accountability is accountability, and sometimes it stings, and you know what? A stinging comment can change the way you act or change the way you behave. And yeah, I'm not suggesting you look at your kid and go, hey, fatso, stop eating that. But it's like, you know,
okay,
if you make a slight, you know, comment about, well, you know, we want to eat healthy. Like, what are we supposed to do? Not say anything and just let them do whatever they want?
No, you have to. You have to do the eating healthy, but I'll also say, friends, genetics plays a huge role in this. I have three kids with different genetics. And I remember one of my kids like was at the pediatrician once. This is years ago when they were just getting into puberty and you had still have that baby fat and they were becoming a little sensitive about it. And they said to the doctor, like, you know, what should I do to lose some weight or something like this? And the doctor looked directly at me and said, well, you know, healthy habits start at home. They mimic what they see. Mm-hmm. And if they're modeled good behavior, then they'll have good behavior. I wanted to punch that doctor in the throat because I'm like, dude, look at me. I'm 100 pounds soaking wet. Yeah. I do yoga almost, this is before I got sick. I do yoga almost every day. I do cardio, like, stop it.
Yeah.
I meditate, like, stop it. It's not just, and this is what my kids were seeing, but they have a different body type than me. They have different genetics than me. So it's not just all about restriction or modeling. Sometimes people are just built differently or, you know, so I was so mad because those of, and then you guilt shame, you shame the parent. You know, we're trying, trust me. Well, many of us are trying. But it does seem like the world is against us with all the candy and the treats and the unhealthy school lunches and the, you know, all that popcorn at the movies and the triple sizes at the restaurants. It's really hard.
And the example thing is a good point, too. It's like your kid, like, you know, you can put a plate of broccoli and chicken breast on the plate of your children. Mm-hmm. And if you're sitting over there eating pizza, they're going to be like, why am I doing this? And you can have that.
Yeah, but that's different. But even if you put a broccoli and grilled chicken breast and you're eating it, your kid doesn't want that.
Doesn't want it.
You know, I didn't want certain things.
I don't want it either. That's the thing. It's like you have to admit it. I don't want to eat this either. That should be an honest conversation. Look, kids, I know this food sucks and it tastes like cardboard. I don't want to eat it either. But guess what? It's healthy and we're going to live a longer life to stress about other stuff. So there you go.
Right. But trying is important. And the only thing I will say about this, you know, like about the 70% of parents say that it's an unhealthy diet. I do believe that when the kids get a little bit older, and I'm seeing that now with my kids, one is 20, one is 18, one is 16. They are open to more healthy diets. Yeah. It's that in between stage where they're hungry and they're kids and they're, you know, they don't really know better. But when they get older, they're like, oh yeah, this does affect my weight or this does affect how I look or how I feel.
Yeah.
And hopefully if you're still fighting the good fight by 18 and having the quinoa and the kale in the house, hopefully they will see the light.
Have you given up? Or if you're, I want to hear from you perfect parents. Like, oh, my kids ate just everything right. It was great. And now they're super healthy and I love them. 651-461-9226. It's the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Let's hear from you perfect parents next.
Good luck.
Just got a text from my wife. I'm driving Ryan to school, that's my stepson, after a dentist appointment, stopped at McDonald's, he's eating a plate of hotcakes, drowning in syrup, and a Coca-Cola on his way to school.
I get it, Jen.
That's called mom life. That's mom life and dad life, too. It's like, you know how many...
Kids got to eat.
It was just automatic, like, you know... Here's how Dad prepared dinner. Peel off the top of those instant mac and cheese cups, pour the water to the fill line, and put it in the microwave. Boom. Mm-hmm. Done. And there's no shame in that, everybody. No shame at all. Adam, if you think that broccoli and grilled chicken tastes like cardboard, you need to learn how to make it better or go to a different restaurant. Our kids and our grandkids think that broccoli is a treat, and they loved grilled chicken.
Well done.
They tell
you're,
you.
I guess
love
you're
it.
Doing it
they
right.
Tell
I'm
you
not.
They love it. Morgan, when she was a toddler, we went out to a restaurant and we ordered broccoli and she started just mowing it down. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this. This kid loves broccoli. This is the greatest thing I've ever. You know what? About an hour later, she was screaming in pain because of the gas that it was causing.
The gas.
Yes.
Yeah. The gas. Mm-hmm. Although the kids that I know that love broccoli usually only know broccoli that's smothered with cheese.
Yeah.
When you put cheese on anything, it tastes better.
Right.
That kind of defeats the purpose, though. This texter says, I ate healthy, fed kids healthy, exercised and jogged daily. 1 in 4 followed my example.
Yes.
Oh, well, I tried. You know what, or mom or dad? Amen. You tried. You also did what was best for you. You ate healthy. I'll say this. I, you know, try to do a lot of yoga, not nearly as much as when I was sick. It's much more toned down. But every now and then, one of the kids will pop in and do some yoga with me. you know, pull up on that. They'll do it with me. I'm like, oh, okay, it's sinking in, and they feel better afterward. I am the opposite of the perfect mom, but I guess some of those things that you do, I guess they sink in. I mean, the kids do eat a lot healthier now. They're more concerned about what they put in their bodies because they're grown.
They grow up, and I was the same way. My mom went, oh, you're the pickiest eater. Yeah, I had a very limited, for years at Thanksgiving, I had turkey, I had gravy, and a roll. And that was it.
Mashed potatoes, maybe.
I didn't like mashed potatoes until I was in my 20s. And you know what? I regret eating them because now, like, I love mashed potatoes, and I can't believe I didn't like them. In fact, you know why I was disappointed? Because I was the only person I knew that didn't like mashed potatoes, and I wish I was that way because that's like a point of pride. I'm the only person I know that doesn't like mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. But the point is, is I got older. And it's like you realize, well, you know, I have to eat this stuff because it is healthy for you. I have to have a little color in my food, you know, the greens. Mm-hmm. And you just grow up. So
you grow up.
You can't stress about it that much, you know?
Right. So I get it. The study that says 70% of us think we have an unhealthy diet, but we do when the kids are little, when they're in that time frame. Hopefully, whatever we have taught them sinks in by 16, 17, 18. I know college is a time of beer and pizza and ramen noodles. Mm-hmm. You know, that happens too. But college is also a time of a lot of exercise. Mm-hmm. They're always walking to class.
Right.
They're walking to go out. They're, you know, I mean, imagine a lot of them don't have, you know, cars.
Or when you put on the freshman 20, or in my case 30, you realize, boy, I've got to better start working out because this isn't working out. Back to our conversation about shaming, you know, like about, you know, there's a fine line. Here's my dad used to call me chub, and it didn't cause me to have an eating disorder. I did lose 40 pounds between 8th and 9th grade, though, on purpose.
So
I'm saying, like,
You were a little chub.
It's a fine line. And then another texter says, easy, I pay my kids and my child's class to make fun of them. Dad of the year. Father of the year.
Dad of the year. That's right. It does even out, and then they become who they are, and then I get it. But to David's point, we could use a little more help.
Oh, yeah.
We could use more help with having fewer processed foods. We could use more help in telling, you know, people that vegetables are really, you know, a healthier eat, put more vegetables than meat on the plate. We could use more help in the schools with healthier breakfasts and lunches. You know, parents could use the help. So especially working parents or making the, not that you even need organic stuff. I don't buy organic stuff, but making the stuff that's healthier, cheaper and more available. And again, the infrastructure around eating healthier, I do think needs to be easier.
Yeah, and that goes for any age. I mean, that we've been hoodwinked into thinking that even things that we think are healthy are not, just because of the way they are made. This is an American problem. I don't think there's a lot of other countries that eat like this, that eat much healthier and more natural foods. And I think this is an American problem.
Correct.
But it's like, are we ever going to get food companies, like large-scale food companies, to say, yeah, don't make this stuff so addicting? It's like that's how they get us to buy it.
Mm-hmm. This texter writes, and we'll leave on this. Oh, parenting has really changed, friends. This texter says, when I was in 8th grade, I was probably a little plus size. My mom would take me shopping and say, let's buy a size smaller and you can work into it. How do you like that? I mean, that's also uncomfortable. A size smaller? I'm so sorry. I hope it all worked out, and I hope you have a good relationship with your mom. And it seems like maybe she was trying to do the right thing, but that's a painful memory. I'm sorry.
Craziness at the state legislature. I know you've been off, but I think you've been following the situation with Senator Nicole Mitchell, who accused of breaking into her stepmother's home in Detroit Lakes. Well, she's been MIA this week at the Senate, and that means it's 33 Republican votes and 33 Senate votes or Democrat votes. So it's creating quite the situation. Mary LaHammer, who covers the state legislature for Twin Cities Public Television, she'll join us next to talk about what is going on at the Minnesota State Senate. That conversation's coming up.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go. It's 9:37. Adam and Jordana. Jordana back, thankfully. And the craziness at the Minnesota Senate with the burglary arrest of Woodbury Democratic Senator Nicole Mitchell has thrown things for quite a loop, because now it's a 33-33 vote without her in the chamber. So what does that mean with important items of business happening there? We bring in and we welcome Mary LaHammer. If you've followed the legislature at all, you know Mary LaHammer. She covers the legislature, a host over at Twin Cities Public Television. She joins us on the John Schuster Coble Banker Hotline. There's always something, Mary, at the state legislature. This is just the latest example of that thin margin in the Senate, and how, and again, separating ourselves from what is a family situation with Senator Mitchell, but the chaos it's created at the Senate is something to see. There's always something happening there.
Yeah, and that's the important part here. I know a lot of people have been snarking, why is this arrest such a big deal, when there's currently at least five members of the legislature who have also been under arrest and had DWIs. The difference with this is what you mentioned, what that created in the Senate yesterday when they tried to meet and tried to get some business done, because there was that one vote margin. You lose one DFLer, 33-33. A tie vote is a no vote. Nothing happens in a tie vote. So 33-33 is complete stalemate. It has shut down the Senate essentially for the week. The schedules are cleared. There's no known path forward yet. We will see what happens, but this is incredibly relevant. It's not unprecedented. As I said, other lawmakers been arrested. I've actually been there long enough, and this will be in my story Friday night on Almanac. I watched a House member get arrested on the floor while serving, also for a felony, and this was a felony sexual assault against a minor. So this is not unprecedented for those of us who have been hanging around there for quite some time.
When was that?
Wait, yeah,
that
tell us some of those
stories, 2000. Yes, yeah. And that representative did not resign, did have ethics charges, but served out his term, kept his vote there on the House floor back in the day, and then did not run for re-election.
Who was it? Do you remember?
Yes, Representative Jim Rossberg. He was a Republican in the House. And what was interesting then was they opened up caucus and the media got to go in. And I have tape of who was the majority leader then, future Governor Tim Pawlenty, in caucus. So that was an interesting turn of events. And the other thing I'll be working on is more context, because that's what we do Fridays on Almanac. Also, the new majority leader, Senator Aaron Murphy, is new. This is her first time as majority leader of the Senate, but not her first time in leadership. She was House majority leader, and she was the DFL-endorsed candidate for governor until somebody named Tim Walz ran against her in a primary, and he became governor instead. So there's a lot of layers and backstory on this.
So, Mary, what does, first of all, I want to know, what is pending legislation that now is not going to get done? And then are they just going to adjourn and have this play out? Or, I mean, is there going to be resolution and can we get back on track?
To be determined. Most of the major work of session is yet to be done, although we are not in a budget year. You know, Minnesota government requires balanced budget. They did that last year. There is a supplemental budget in the works, so that will not happen if they can't get the votes. And something that Republicans want and could give their votes to is a bonding bill for state construction projects. They still want that. There is a major problem with ambulance and EMS funding, especially in rural Minnesota, where a lot of Republicans are from. They want that. So if Republicans are willing to work with Democrats, they could get some of their priorities through. What happens to Democrats, who technically still control all the state government? They have an equal rights amendment still hanging in the balance that abortion access language might have been added to. So that may not happen. Gun control, they passed some last session, but Democrats in the House are still moving various gun control measures. not going to get a lot of Republican votes likely on that. So it's kind of Democrats' wish list, some things that they wanted to get on the ballot and act on before they face the voters, because the entire state House of Representatives is up for reelection, and that will control the Capitol.
Mary, Senate Republicans filing an ethics complaint, that's probably not surprising, but what is somewhat surprising is that they want to expedite it. Can you explain why they want to do that and what Democratic objections to that would be?
Yes, this is not unusual. That other felony case I mentioned way back when in the year 2000 also resulted in ethics charges, ethics complaint. What Republicans were trying to do, though, as you mentioned, yes, expedite it so that it would be forced to be acted on during session, because right now there's less than a month left in session, and the policy is that you have to act within 30 days. Well, that means the Ethics Committee can wait until session is over to actually deal with this. That's how the calendar is falling right now. So Republicans wanted it expedited to deal with it. They also added a clause to consider expulsion, which is another level, and that actually is quite unprecedented. We've definitely had ethics charges. We've had people resign, but
have we had a lawmaker
ever been expelled?
Expelled?
Not in my quarter century there.
And she
Very
said,
unusual.
You know, Mitchell made a statement in the charging documents that said, "I know I did something bad,"
contradictory statements since then. And I think that's what I had Senate Republican Minority Leader Mark Johnson on the program last night, just as we were getting the 911 transcript. And his point was every new bit of information that comes out, he thinks doesn't help her case. He said, boy, you know, that transcript, the description of being on the ground and her mother-in-law tripping over her while she was on the ground in her bedroom, again, dressed in black, with a backpack, with a flashlight, entering through a basement window, that just to Republicans doesn't look good, and they think that's a problem. But again, you know, should people in glass houses throw stones? There have been plenty of arrests and ethical issues on both sides of the aisle in both chambers over the years. It's a tough one.
We're talking to Mary LaHammer from Twin Cities Public Television. This obviously puts Democrats in a very difficult situation here. Do you expect her to be back, meaning Senator Mitchell, at the Capitol? I know she can possibly vote remotely. What do you anticipate here, and how soon might we hear at least some resolution as to whether or not she's going to actually show up?
Well, so far on the printed schedule we have, we don't appear to have any resolution or answers yet this week. Lawmakers typically don't work a ton on Fridays. There's nothing on the schedule today, so I'm not expecting resolution this week. I asked the Senate Minority Leader yesterday, can Senator Mitchell vote? Should she vote? And he said, yeah. And the Majority Leader, Aaron Murphy, said she's duly elected. She can vote and she should vote. The question is where and how she does that. The Senate does still allow some remote voting. You have to get permission from your leader. So that could happen. Senator Murphy could give Senator Mitchell permission to vote remotely so she doesn't have to come in person and deal with, you know, all the media, all the public, all the people who will be following around. You know, all of us were gathered yesterday in the hallways and the gallery, and our photographers are shooting an empty desk, and that will continue probably for some time, but she is still elected. And all the leaders have said she can vote. That could happen, and Democrats need her to vote to get anything done and end the current stalemate.
And the remote voting was an issue even before she was arrested. There has been plenty of back and forth on what constitutes the necessity to vote remotely.
Yeah, and that policy has changed. It started during COVID when folks were home and they needed to change the rules. But the Senate is loath to change their rules compared to the House. You know, the House allows eating and drinking on the floor. And the big Senate rule change was actually that they allowed lawmakers to have water. It actually took a couple of nursing moms from both sides of the aisle to say, I actually need water to be able to help feed my child. Jeez. So that was the biggest policy change we've seen in the Senate when it comes to rules. So remote voting was a big stretch when water was difficult to get onto the floor.
Oh my God.
There was a move recently. Republicans wanted to limit remote voting just to military service and health. Now, actually, ironically, Senator Mitchell is in the military, and folks have wondered if this could be described as a health issue as well. No details yet on that.
Mary LaHammer from Twin Cities PBS, we so appreciate you joining us, and thank you for shaking this out with us. And we'll call you again.
All right. Thanks, you do.
Thanks, Mary.
Adam, okay, whatever's happening in the Senate, that's all going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But this story is crazy. And you know what? I think I would have done the same thing.
To get family items back.
Here's the story, the backstory, and I know you probably talked about this a little bit yesterday, or a lot yesterday, excuse me. But, you know, she broke in, allegedly, to her stepmother's house to get some items of her father's that she was afraid she wouldn't be able to retrieve. That's what, you know, she says. That's where more of this information is coming out. And Adam, how many stories have we heard where, like, you know, the evil stepmom or the evil stepdad doesn't talk to the kids or after somebody passes away or becomes dementia or becomes incoherent, and it causes this huge family rift where between the kids and the new spouse. It happens. And I don't know what she was retrieving. I don't know. She says a couple of items that she felt were being wrongfully withheld from her. You know, I don't think it's stacks of cash, but I know it's against the law, and I know I'm admitting that I might commit a felony here, but I have some empathy for that. If there are things that you wanted from your sick father and you have a family rift, you want your things. He's your father.
Right. And if that's the question, would you do it? I don't think I would. I think I try to pursue it legally, but you're right. It's a desperate situation and a sad one. 651-461-9226. Would you break the law to get your stuff back in a case like this? Your texts and calls next.
Someone texts, she was on the bedroom floor of a woman. That's totally not normal. I know. I get it that what Nicole did, it's not really normal. It was Nicole Mitchell. She is a state senator, and she basically, allegedly, you know, broke into her stepmom's house to get things of her dad's that she felt was being wrongfully kept from her. And I'm just, look, would I really do it? I don't know. Hopefully I will never be in that situation. But lots of families have issues when somebody dies and the children feel slighted, or the stepchildren feel slighted, or the, you know, it's such a bad situation. And I don't know what to do in that situation, you know, where you have like the evil stepmom or the evil stepdad that may be out of spite because the kids treated the second spouse badly their whole life. So they're not letting them have the dad's, you know, watch or plaque or trophy from softball. I mean, some of them are, it's not even about money. It might just be items. And I don't know.
Yeah. In this case, if it's like one of it was her dad's ashes, obviously there's no monetary value there. That's purely sentimental. I'm willing to give someone grace to, you know, in these situations, because sadly family situations result in people doing things out of character, and sadly and tragically often it turns violent. And I'm willing, but that being said, I think that's a separate issue from her role in the state legislature right now. And I see a text criticizing Republicans for opening an ethics complaint. That they have every right to do that. If this were a Republican senator, you can bet that the Democrats would be doing the same thing. It's playing politics there. It gives them an advantage. They are going to exploit that. We should not. That doesn't mean that they are passing judgment on her as a bad person. I think we need to learn a lot more information before we pass judgment on Nicole Mitchell. But that being said, it has hindered her ability to do her job as a state senator, full stop.
Correct.
And I think absolutely Republicans have a right to exploit that in this case, because if we're on the other shoe, the Democrats would be doing the same thing.
And that I completely agree with. Nobody's above the law. I think there should be an investigation. If, you know, this is what it is and there are going to be charges pressed, she should be, you know, held accountable. 100%. I'm just thinking, you know, the humanity of it.
Right.
And this isn't a debate about the law or what. Yes, of course, she should do the right thing. Somebody texted me, said, Jordana, You wouldn't. You're 100% a rule follower. I know. I'd probably be too afraid.
No, but that's the point. That's the point, though. Nicole Mitchell is she's a officer in the Air Force. She's a state legislator. She's got no history of any. That's what I'm saying is things, these family situations make people do things that they normally wouldn't do, which, again, is still against the law, and they should face consequences for that. But it also, it's different for someone just randomly committing a crime.
Totally agree.
I also think,
David,
Jory, you said, oh, I would do this. Like, if this were, you know, the shoe was on the other foot, that you would maybe go do that. I think you would. I don't think you'd go to quite the extent that this case, but where maybe. It's the middle of the night, it's breaking in the window, all those things. Like, that's
driving 3 hours from her home to do
like
it.
A step too far, I think.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm too much of a wimp to do. Like, I don't know that I would ever be able to hold it together in that situation.
And but again, so we need to know a lot of more information. We also need some quick takes. Dave, what do you got to
come up? Controversy over at MIA, but really, I need one more quick take, and I'm outsourcing it to our listeners. Please text us now. Your quick take, we'll add it to our next segment. Text us now at the number 651-461-9226.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time? Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.